from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the summer salmon season gears up with Copper River's first opening. Cannery bosses in Unalaska are handling the state's new higher minimum wage by raising the rent they charge folks who come up and stay in their bunkhouses. And we get a preview of the Yukon salmon season.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits. Marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960. Or online at alaskaboat.com.
Fishing kicked off this week for Cordova fishermen with the Copper River District's first 12-hour opening on Thursday. KCHU's Marsha Lynn has more on what shapes this year's large forecast for sockeye salmon returns.
On a very rainy Friday, about a week before the season opener, I'm standing at a high desk with Steve Moffitt in the Cordova, Alaska Department of Fish and Game office. He's what some fish heads call a numbers cruncher. We're looking at a document spread across a large computer screen.
A sheet of numbers, very good. It's like big numbers, so I can read them. And you helped put these numbers together.
Right, yep. I generally do the preseason and in-season forecast for salmon in the Prince William Sound and Copper River area.
Moffitt's official title is the Prince William Sound Finfish Research Biologist. He's been with the department in Cordova for over two decades and says this year's total sockeye run in the region could be a record breaker.
Projected run for this year is 3.1 million, which is the largest preseason forecast the department has ever produced for sockeye salmon. And that would include 2.7 million natural stocks and 450,000 hatchery stocks returning to Gulkana Hatchery, currently the largest sockeye salmon hatchery in the world.
Factoring in escapement goals and in-river user allocations, the 500 or so Copper River Drift gillnet permit holders are looking at a 2.2 million fish harvest for sockeye, also known as red salmon. But Chinook, also known as king salmon, is a different story.
For the Copper River, our Chinook salmon forecast is second lowest in the last 35 years. So that's going to make it difficult for us to manage a extremely large sockeye forecast and an extremely small Chinook salmon forecast.
In addition to preseason salmon forecasts, Moffitt does in-season assessments, which he says can be challenging.
Challenges in particular for assessment are that we use Miles Lake sonar. And early in the season, if there's shelf ice or Miles Lake is frozen, then we generally either can't put the sonar in the water to make an assessment, or we have to keep removing it to keep it from being hit by big ice chunks coming down. And it's approximately $100,000 worth of equipment for each bank, so you don't want to lose that equipment.
He says assessing the early season run strength pretty much depends on the weather.
Sometimes that ice will go out really fast and fish will move up immediately. Right now the water is kind of low, even though the river is mostly open. So in general, the river has to be open, and you have to have a significant amount of water coming down for the fish to key into.
As we talk, Moffitt flashes black and white photos of the broad Copper River on the screen. We can see ice-plugged spots despite an unseasonably warm winter.
In the Sound, buoy temperatures have averaged almost 2 degrees centigrade higher than the recent 10-year average, which is extremely, extremely warm. There's not very much snow up the river. There's open water all the way to Miles Lake, but right at the Million Dollar Bridge, there's still some shore ice on the south bank where the main sonar is. Miles Lake is still frozen. There's generally not much fish passage until the Miles Lake's ice goes out.
Although fish forecasting can be an imperfect science, Moffitt has high hopes for the coming salmon season in Prince William Sound.
We're hoping that the sockeye will come in at forecast and the Chinook will come in significantly larger than forecast. That'll make it easier for everyone.
This year's opening date for the Copper River salmon fishery is May 14th, and mid-May is usually when it starts amid a big media fanfare. That's the result of an intensive marketing effort which seems to have paid off over the years. Early season prices for Copper River salmon are generally the highest in the state. In Valdez, I'm Marcia Lynn.
I love Alaskan salmon, wild Alaskan salmon, caught by Alaskan fishermen. I love cod and shellfish, they sure make a swell dish. I think that halibut is grand. I don't want T-bone steak, carved from a steer in Texas, but give me fish. And I don't give a damn if I do pay taxes. I love Alaskan salmon, good Alaskan salmon, caught by Alaskan fishermen.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
In the next few weeks, thousands of seafood processors will return to Unalaska for the pollock bee season. They'll be earning more money thanks to the state's minimum wage hike, but they'll also be paying more to live there. As KUCB's Annie Ropeek tells us, added room and board costs are just one way processing plants are hoping to offset the wage increase.
Alyeska and Westward Seafoods have never charged for room and board. But on June 1st, just before the start of pollock bee season, President Mark Johansson says that'll change.
This has been a very, very hard soul-searching decision for us. We've been trying to buck the trend and make it a reasonable and a good place for people to work. The work is hard and challenging, and we understand that. But because of, you know, global competition and pressures, we have had to, unfortunately, make that decision.
They're implementing the state's maximum room and board charge of $15 a day at their shoreside plants in Unalaska. Johansson says it comes out to about a dollar of every hour's wages, including overtime. Since the minimum wage also went up a dollar this year, he says the changes are a wash for now.
And then, of course, as of January 1st, the minimum wage will increase again by a dollar. And so there is no remedy on room and board. We'll just need to either eat that cost or, you know, find other ways to become more efficient in our operation.
Johansson's also worried about the $1 to $4 million cost of adding employee health coverage under the Affordable Care Act. So in the long term, he's hoping to pare down and automate more of their processing lines. That's going to happen at Unicy, too. Unalaska's biggest seafood processor has plans to shrink its pollock operations back into one factory in the next few years. They're also upping their room and board charge. It started at $10 a day for the past couple of years, decreasing the more a processor works. But this spring, facing a $3 million cost bump from minimum wage, President Tom Enlow says they've gone to the upper limit, too.
We're not really in a position to, you know, just take that cost, any cost increase for that matter, and pass it on to our customers.
That's because they're working with set market prices for seafood, where costs are shared between the harvesters and the processors. Since the wage hike impacts the processors, Enlo says they may want to renegotiate those price formulas down the line. But for now, room and board is their first line of defense, along with some cuts to staffing. That's come through the natural attrition, Enlo says they see at the start of every season.
There's always going to be a certain amount of workers to come up and say, oh, I had no idea I was going to have to work all day. And they end up leaving.
This year, Unicy wanted to see how low they could go. They didn't rehire for those empty jobs and went through a season about 80 people short.
Our crab and cod throughput always suffers when we are down, and our head count is down below a certain number. And we certainly saw that take place this year. But it's just all in an effort to try to hold those, you know, costs down.
In pollock bee season, which covers 60% of the year's huge quota, they'll move staff around and focus on producing surimi. Right now, there's a better market for the imitation crab product than there is for fillets. Over at Alyeska and Westward, President Mark Johansson says they're keeping their headcount the same for now. And in fact, they've had to work harder than normal to recruit to fill those jobs. With higher wages up against room and board costs and an improving job market down south, he says it's not as easy as it once was to lure new processors up to Alaska. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Another poor run of Chinook salmon is expected to make its way up the Yukon River this summer. While that means similar restrictions to last year when it comes to catching kings, officials with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game say a strong summer and fall chum run should provide plenty of fish to fill drying racks all along the river, as well as some commercial openings. They say there might even be a small chance for subsistence users to enjoy some king salmon. continuing a decades-long trend of low runs for the prize kings. Fish and Game Managers expects a Chinook run between 118,000 and 114,000, with escapement into Canada about identical to last year's 42,500 up to 55,000.
You know, we got to protect this resource. If we don't, we're going to lose it. Your grandchildren, great-grandchildren will wonder whatever happened to the fish, you know. And it's up to us, the ones that are living now, that we can make these sacrifices so we can at least see this hopefully rebound.
The week Chinook run means another summer of nearly total closures for subsistence fishermen. But after meeting with fishery managers, many subsistence users, like St. Mary's Mayor Bill Ahlstrom, say it's a necessary sacrifice.
We're going to stay conservative, but if it looks like in-season assessment is showing that escapement goals are highly likely to be met, there might be opportunities for us to use gears that minimize Chinook salmon harvest, not completely eliminate it.
But there might be a chance for a small taste of king salmon. Stephanie Schmidt is the summer season fishery manager along the Yukon for the Department of Fish and Game.
People should not expect a full-on subsistence harvest here. We're not putting Chinook salmon gear in the water. We are not specifically targeting Chinook salmon gear. Like I said, it would all be incidental.
A somewhat larger run size compared to last year could provide for some small incidental Chinook harvest, but Schmidt is clear it's far from a full opening and will depend on escapement.
Last year, half of the harvest of summer chum in the commercial fishery came from those selective gear types, and we ended up having one of the largest summer chum commercial fisheries since 1989 in the lower river, in large part due to those selective gear types.
The first salmon are expected to enter the river around June 12th to 15th. Until then, subsistence fishing for non-salmon species remains open. Once the Chinook run begins to build, closures will follow as the fish make their way upriver. Then it's time for summer chums. An above-average run means a full subsistence harvest and roughly a million fish for commercial openings. At first, fishery managers are allowing gear like dip nets, manned fish wheels, and beach seines to give fishermen a chance to release any Chinook they might accidentally catch. Gear restrictions will relax as the Chinook move further upriver. Schmidt says it's a strategy that worked well last year.
The fall chum look good, and so does cohos. So we should have a good summer on fish on the Yukon, and hopefully everybody will get their share for their subsistence needs.
For fishermen like Ahlstrom in St. Mary's, that means a good summer for commercial fishing and a chance for subsistence users to fill their racks.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KCHU's Marsha Lynn, reporting from Cordova, AUCB's Annie Ropeek, who I'm sad to report is moving back east after nearly 2 years of truly outstanding reporting in Unalaska. KNOM's Matthew Smith in Nome and APRN's Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.